All right. Let's get fired up here.
Maximum freedom. Read.
Stay on target.
Maximum freedom.
Stay on target.
Maximum freedom. Read Rothbard.
Well, hello and welcome to the Actual Anarchy Podcast. This is that podcast where we talk about movies from a Rothbardian anarcho-capitalist perspective. And I know we've threatened you guys in the past that we do not only a weekly show, but also occasionally with those specials and things like that. We haven't done a special in years, but here is one now. It is our Cinco de Mayo special, and we're going to be having a special guest on for the movie Desperado. But before we introduce them on this 232nd episode of the show, I'm going to introduce you to my amigo, my life partner, and hetero life mate, Robert Johnson. How are you doing, sir?
Soy muy, muy bueno, señor. Gracias.
You too. Soy de Colombia. So Robert's dad was our Spanish teacher way back in the day, and obviously it has not stuck with us as we've gone on in years. But
me gusta escuchar la radio y ver televisión.
Y telenovelas. That's right.
Sí.
But this should be a fun one. We have a really exciting guest coming on. But Robert, I just want to check in with you. Since we recorded for The Matrix, and we're going to be recording for Matrix Revolution, Reloaded tomorrow night, the month of May Matrix. Are you going to be raring to go for that one with Pat McFarlane of Liberty Weekly?
That old Patty McFarlane. Yeah, I will be around to talk with him about the Reloaded. It'll be good to talk to him again. I haven't talked to his dumb ass for quite some time. And my dumb ass always, you know, enjoys talking to his dumb ass. So it'll be good.
It's Dumas. That was like one of my favorite commercials from back in the day. Anyway, we should stop shooting the shit and wasting our time here. We're going to be getting into the last night's portion of the show. You can find the show notes more for this one at actualanarchy.com/232. And we will get into the last nighters and introduce our guest in just a moment. Arriba, arriba. Hey everyone, it's Daniel Elwood, and my co-host is Robert Paul Johnson. We are the Last Nighters. You can find us on the Liberty Movement's YouTube channel. You can also find us at lastnighters.com. This is episode, what number is this? 175 of the show, and it's a Cinco de Mayo special. And we're going to be reviewing the movie Desperado with Johnny from Peddling Fiction. He does a excellent podcast, or so I'm told. He mentioned what he does in it on the pre-show bonus content available for our Patreon supporters at go to lastnighters.com/Patreon to get in on that action. But Johnny, welcome to the show. I'm going to introduce you now. How's it going?
Hey, it's going great, man. Thanks for having me on.
All right. Yeah. So I appreciated you rescheduling multiple times for this Cinco de Mayo special. It, of course, is presently Cinco de Mayo, so we can't push it back any further. Even though you had bikini models doing photo shoots on the beach, which totally worthy of canceling on us. So thank you for your commitment. Bros before hoes. thank you very much.
Yeah. We better make this a good one because, man, what's going on out in front of my place is that's a once in a lifetime thing. But I'm hoping they're going to be here all week. So we'll see if I get lucky.
But in more ways than one. Anyway, why don't you take a moment to introduce yourself to our audience and let them know what your show is about and where they can find it.
Sure. Well, I do a podcast called Peddling Fiction. I do it twice a week, usually on Tuesdays and Fridays. It does depend on, you know, how much tequila I have down here during the week. I'm actually in Mexico right now, and I've been living down here for almost a year. But I generally talk about politics, current events, and economics from a libertarian point of view. I am an ANCAP, unapologetically ANCAP libertarian. And I try to keep it fun and light and just sort of teach the basics and make it approachable. I'm not one of those autistic libertarians, and I try not to turn off a lot of the potential libertarian converts out there.
Right. I think that's a noble effort in that, because it is very easy to go into autistic mode and turn off a lot of people.
Yeah, I save those conversations for, you know, my knucklehead friends that are into that sort of thing.
Right. After a few cervezas.
Right.
Something like that. Yeah. I remember when Robert and I were in our evangelical phase, and yeah, it's quite annoying for the recipients of that. I think we've toned it down just a little bit. And as we were talking about in the Matrix episode, Robert, I sort of ruined your life a little bit introducing you to this stuff. And I don't know, it tests a lot of relationships, friendships, family relationships, and things of that nature. And you make new friends, but most of them are, virtual friends.
And you've never apologized.
I think I've apologized profusely. I will publicly apologize to you now for ruining your life by introducing you to the one true philosophy of freedom.
I'll think about it.
It is a blessing and a curse, you know.
Yeah, it's two-sided. It's a two-way. What did we say that? It's a anyway. I'm thinking of all these gross things.
What?
Two times.
What are we talking about? Chinese
I don't know. Stuff? I don't know what we're talking about. I've been drinking. I've got wine. Robert's got Elysian, Space Dust, and Johnny, you got some whiskey going, I think. So we're definitely celebrating the Cinco de Mayo, which apparently you were telling us in pre-show that it's not that big of a deal down in Mexico. So it's mostly an Americanized holiday of it.
Yeah. Yeah. The Mexicans that I know, they don't care at all about Cinco de Mayo. It means nothing to them. Maybe that's what the whole photo shoot is out front, though. Because I did notice that they were all speaking English when I walked by earlier. The skis on.
All right. Well, very nice. We'll expect a full report in the post-show bonus content that we're going to be offering to people.
I'll try to snap some pictures, too.
Yeah, maybe do a little beach walk after that. But how we normally start this off is with the old Google description. So I will bring that up main screen. Okay, here we go. And I will start to read if I can here. So we're going to be doing Desperado right now. It is a film from 1995 by Robert Rodriguez. It got a 7.2 out of 10 on IMDb, 64% on Rotten Tomatoes, 55% Metacritic, and 84% of Google users like it. The description reads, Mariachi, played by Antonio Banderas, plunges headfirst into the dark border underworld when he follows a trail of blood to the last of the infamous Mexican drug lords, Bucho. For an action-packed, bullet-riddled showdown, with the help of his best friend, played by Steve Buscemi, and a beautiful bookstore owner, played by Friedrich Hayek, the mariachi tracks Bucho, takes on his army of desperados, and leaves a trail of blood of his own. Came out August 25th, 1995. Director Robert Rodriguez also has Quentin Tarantino in a Quentin Tarantino-esque role where he's telling some pretty funny stuff. So, Robert, let's go to you for your opening on this one.
All right. So Robert Rodriguez, the guy who is responsible for several excellent films. I want to say that, yes, Desperado is one of them. Dan, thank you very much. Wow. Yeah. Desperado, probably, I think, my very first introduction to him. Also, my first introduction to Hayek and Banderas, who went on to have quite good careers of their own. But Rodriguez, who is famous for being able to make a movie on a budget, and of course, El Mariachi made on almost $0 budget, I think. And you were saying it was a few thousand. I want to say it was $600. And he just had a vision for things. And he basically, this is a retelling sort of El Mariachi. It's technically a sequel, but it's kind of done with sort of the budget of like an American Hollywood movie. It's still super, super cheap to make. I don't remember the budget, but if you go into the director's notes and like the behind the scenes stuff, he really talks about how he planned out everything and only had like Buscemi for a few days and basically knew what he wanted before he did it. And he was able to shoot the whole thing in just a couple of weeks. And you know, it's a fun, bombastic movie. It's a whole shoot 'em up, a whole lot of style. It's not Shakespeare, but it's not trying to be Shakespeare. It's trying to entertain you. It's trying to
show you something pretty cool. I was along for the ride for the like, probably the fourth or fifth time I've seen it. It's been a while since I'd seen it, so I did want to rewatch it. You know, there are flaws that I absolutely am not going to let the movie get away with. I will bring them up during this podcast and I will complain about them. But for the most part, I had a lot of fun still to this day. I still think it's a lot of fun. And I enjoy Rodriguez's style. You know, the fact that he became friends with Tarantino and Tarantino shows up, kind of a little bit of his influence kind of rubs off on him. That doesn't hurt things because I'm a huge Tarantino fan, with Pulp Fiction being my favorite movie of all time. And then a bunch of his other films ranking in my top 50. So this is a kind of a movie that, I don't know, I'd say I grew up on, but I definitely enjoyed it when it came out and I've seen it multiple times ever since. And I think it still holds up to this day. It's kind of silly and it's kind of funny, especially if you're not into this style. I was watching it with another person and they were kind of laughing at it. Like, this is kind of silly, but you know, it's a macho movie. It's unapologetically filled with like testosterone, like about this badass protagonist, like what we used to get back before kind of like the beta males took over the Hollywood scene. It was like filled with testosterone. You had Stallone and Schwarzenegger and Van Damme and all these guys. And Banderas is very much in that vein. And it's kind of like the heyday of the testosterone period of Hollywood. This is like a movie that was kind of on the way out, but it was at the time it still had a chance to hit really strongly. And, I think it's still good. So yeah, whatever you want to talk about from that, let's do it.
All right. Yeah. It's a nice open and I appreciate that you have an appreciation for Rodriguez. I know that you like directors who overcome challenges, not with like throwing money at special effects, but with like, I think it's a concept you've brought up many times where they're confronted with a problem and they have to come up with a practical way to solve it on a budget. And so within those constraints, they can do some great things and make amazing discoveries and utilize tricks of the trade that they kind of experiment with. And it generally turned out really, really well. I do feel like this is a movie that is, they wanted a certain look and a certain style. So there's a little bit less substance. There's a lot of style in this. The story, I think, suffers a little bit. And you, to your point about Banderas being kind of macho, I always thought that. And then I see him in this shirtless, and I'm like, he's kind of a tiny dude. So I was a little bit surprised by that in rewatching this. But Johnny, let's bring you in on this with your take on our opening. And were you blown away with the lack of muscular definition on a shirtless Banderas?
It's funny you should mention that because, yeah, when he's in bed with Salma Hayek and he had his shirt off, I'm like, dude, I'm in better shape than Antonio Banderas was in 95. And I don't know how old he was, but like I'm getting up there. I'm going to be 37 this year. So yeah, I was like, oh man, dude, I thought he was like this huge macho guy. And I was surprised by that too. But yeah, dude, this was just sort of quintessential 90s shoot 'em up movie for me. And I hadn't watched it in probably 20 years. And I watched it again yesterday. And yeah, it still holds up for me too. It's got everything that I want. It's got good action. It's got a young Salma Hayek, which is always nice. And there's some comedy in it too. You know, it made me laugh a few times, not just at like, I don't know, like the cheesy stuff, but like the fact that like he doesn't know the number to the cell phone in his car. And that sort of takes you back to even not even having cell phones back at that point. And man, I don't know. It was a blast in the past. There's a lot of blood, a lot of action. And yeah, it was definitely thin in the substance department, but I was okay with it. Yeah, didn't bother me that there wasn't much there.
Yeah, I'm right. A big fan of telling a simple story in an interesting way. And I don't even, I wouldn't say that this story is told in a very particularly interesting way. There's a lot of kind of hokey tropes that are kind of done and kind of made fun of ever since, you know, like throws the grenades. And then he walks away in slow motion as it explodes behind him. But, you know, there's enough style in here that it just wins me over. Especially it starts off with the Buscemi monologue.
Oh, story. Yeah, that's great. And yeah. That I feel like
so good.
that's what Buscemi is known for, right? Like, he does that in so many movies.
Yeah. Yeah, he's a great character actor, and he brings it here for the few days he was set. He nails that opening scene that sets the tone of the film and just gives it such a sense of style, and it makes you laugh, too. It's funny at the same time, and it instantly won me over.
Yeah, I thought all the scenes in the bar were just great. Even when they're making fun of those like American tourists that come in and complain about the service. And...
It's because piss in it. Yeah, yeah, you gotta love Cheech Marin in this movie too. I mean,
yeah, there's like a bunch of people that you sort of recognize and you're like, oh, I remember that guy, and I have no idea what their name is. But I remember Cheech, obviously, but there's like a few guys on like Bucho's crew that looked really familiar to me and I didn't know who they were.
Right. And of course Danny Trejo.
Danny Trejo as Machete showing up in this one, but except he's like throwing knives instead. That's good.
Yeah.
Yeah. So yeah. Robert, what would you say the story here is? Because it gets a little bit muddled, even though it is kind of a simple story. And there's a couple of like little side quests that kind of happen.
Well, it's a revenge story, but the reasoning why is a little bit muddled. Like did Bucho kill him, kill his girl and shoot his hand, or did his men do it? Because
one of Bucho's henchmen.
Did they? Because he dreams about Bucho. The very beginning of the movie, he's dreaming about Bucho. He's in the bar, and then Bucho walks in. And then he's in the bookstore, and he hears Bucho talking, and he doesn't recognize his own brother's voice.
All right.
Think his voice.
I mean, I don't know. I think if I heard you talking, Daniel, we're not even related. But if I were to close my eyes, even after a few years, and hear you talking, I wouldn't not recognize you. You know what I mean?
Yeah. I think that might be a bit of
a plot hole, Daniel.
A little bit. You drive a truck through that one.
In his defense, he was trying to load his handgun without making any noise, so he's kind of focused on that.
Yeah, that's true. Yeah.
Yeah. Okay. It doesn't forgive it, but I understand that might be the excuse for that. But yeah,
I mean, I know when I'm trying to focus on something and my wife's talking, I don't hear anything she's saying. So,
but this man is the object of his ire for his entire quest.
Yeah,
I think you'd be singularly focused on everything about this dude.
Right. And it's like, he doesn't know enough about his brother that he would put this together long before this events in the movie. Like, where would a name come from if it wasn't like a character trait or something related to them in some way? Like, it just seems like that you would know who it is.
Yeah. And I'm not even sure that the big reveal that he's his brother has any effect on the audience. Like, is it a big, like, oh my goodness, it's his brother? It's not a big reveal scene. Like, Luke, I'm your father. It's like, oh, that was his brother. Oh, okay. And it kind of affects the story a little bit in that they have some kind of a brotherly meeting at the end where he's like, they're talking it out and you think they're going to make up. And then eventually they're like, oh no, we're not going to make up and I'm going to kill you. And somehow they get away because, you know, off screen, the hero is invincible. You know what I mean?
Yeah. Yeah. Yeah, well,
he's pretty invincible on screen in this one too, but off screen especially.
Yeah, I'd agree on that. Now, in the opening in the Google description, I referred to Salma Hayek as Friedrich Hayek, and this is because of the memes, the beautiful memes with, of course, a picture of Salma Hayek with a F.A. Hayek quote on it, which is meant to draw your attention to the quote with the bait of the beautiful Salma Hayek picture, and they just happen to share the same last name, no relation. But I'll post a couple of examples of those on the show notes page because I think that they're really good. In the pre-show, Johnny, we were talking about how we try to be introduce ideas to people. We kind of do that here on our show. And I feel like those memes kind of do a similar thing where you attract somebody to it with the picture and then you give them a nugget of wisdom. that.
Yeah. I can't think of a better way to introduce somebody to like Austrian economics or something than with like a great set of cans.
Sex sells anything.
Yeah.
And she still looks great to this day. But yeah, especially in this film, this is what really put her on the scene as far as I know. And she looks amazing in this thing.
Yeah. So, Robert, there was a line in this that I wanted to ask you about. And I forget who says it, but I think it's when they destroy the bookstore. And they say it's easier to destroy than to create. And I feel like that line makes like it's so much more obvious today when we see these peaceful protests and the destruction going on around the country. We're almost back into peaceful protest season, I think, as the weather starts to warm up here. And we see that it is so much easier to destroy things and tear things down, critical theory and things like that with the agitation for destruction, rather than creating value for others. And I wanted to see if you could draw any lessons from that.
Oh, yeah. It's always easier to complain about a thing. Like the critical race theory, they are perpetually complaining, always unhappy. So you're always pushing for change, and it almost doesn't even matter what it is, so long as you are constantly moving the needle. And you're holding your enemy to their principles. So the enemy, the conservative culture, isn't pushing back in the same way and holding the left principles, if they even really have them, I don't know. But it is definitely just a one-way street. It is the left pushing and the right kind of a little bit holding them back slightly.
But oh no, don't
stop, don't. And you're going too fast. I want to go a little bit slower. You know, it's really quite pathetic. So, but yeah, you're right. It is easier to destroy, and it's really unclear what, if anything, they actually advocate for. They're just against all these quote injustices and violations and oppressions and these kinds of things. If you actually ask them what world they actually really do advocate for, I don't even know if they could give you a coherent response.
Right. And as often the case, there's a
something more, something, something.
Yeah. And as is often the case, there is a kernel of
all of a sudden, is that me or you?
I don't know. Is it me? Can you hear me?
Might've been me. Go ahead.
Johnny, can you hear me? Do I sound all right?
I can hear both of you guys. Yep.
Okay. So my point, I think, was going to be that there's often a kernel of something there that is a legitimate thing to be complaining about and griping about, but they're always pointing it at the wrong thing. So there always is something that's causing a problem, but usually what they'll do is they'll misidentify it and then they'll call for prescriptions that are actually going to exacerbate those things. So we see that often with a Bernie Sanders or an AOC type, where they'll complain about the results of a policy, any given policy, and then demand more of that policy to fight the problems of the previous version of the policy that is like throwing more gasoline on the very fire that they've been proponents of. So that's sort of an offshoot of that. It's not necessarily like the same point you were making, but a corollary, maybe.
Yeah. And there's a big old what? And Banderas was worried about calling in his friends because they would destroy the whole town. And he's kind of not wrong. I noticed at least one, maybe two, improper firearm uses in this movie. I want to say that at one point, you know, he didn't properly warn anybody that he was about to fire a rocket out of his guitar case. And then the other guy with the machine guns, he wasn't exactly making sure that he wasn't exactly pointing them only at the people he wanted to destroy. So there were a few times in this movie where people were less than careful with firearms, if you believe it or not.
Yeah. Yeah. I believe it. I do believe it, but it is, you know, it's movie making magic. And I kind of found it kind of surprising that his buddies do show up and yeah, sure. They do cause a lot of destruction, but then they just kind of die. And that was a bit of a letdown for me. I don't know if I think I wanted something more out of them than just to be on screen for 5 minutes just to die.
Yeah, that bothered me too. It still does. And he didn't seem to care that his friends got killed either. It's like, oh, he's dead. And then he cared more about the little kid that maybe his buddy with the machine gun guitar actually clipped when he was going crazy. But
right.
Yeah, he calls his two best friends, like his only friends in the world after Buscemi got killed. And he gets them killed in a matter of minutes and just moves right along.
Right. And how did they know to meet in front of that one building in that plaza just to get, you know, into that firefight? That seemed just random that the bad guys just showed up right then too.
Yeah.
I think these are the signs of not a hastily written script that aren't exactly, you know, taking into consideration all the logical thought processes. You see this with other directors, kind of like Favreau. Favreau has a similar style in the sense he's not really thinking out his script entirely coherently. Not that I'm a huge critic of Rodriguez's stuff, but I do think he probably works best as a director and less of a writer. I really am a fan of his Sin City piece that he did. I didn't see Sharkboy and Lava Girl. I don't know. I know he made that movie for kids, and I know that apparently that's like a big, like, you didn't see Sharkboy and Lava Girl. Like, I have employees who are, you know, in their 20s now, but they grew up watching Sharkboy and Lava Girl over and over again, and they'll make references to that movie constantly.
I've never even heard of that.
It was a thing for many, many people. So kudos to Robert Rodriguez, who made it. I guess he made that movie for his actual kids.
Hmm. Did he also do Spy Kids, or is that just because it has Antonio Banderas that I'm thinking that?
No, I think he did do that. I could be wrong, but I'm pretty sure he did.
Okay, because Pat McFarlane has talked about wanting to do Spy Kids with us, but maybe we'll have to do that with him after Reloaded.
He's going to force us to watch Spy Kids?
I think so, yeah. Yeah, Johnny, you a Spy Kids fan?
No, I have no idea what you guys are talking about.
perfect. The other thing I wanted to ask about, and Johnny, I'll direct this to you, is at first, Banderas' character is sort of like nurturing to that young boy, teaching him how to play the guitar and whatever, and trying to help him out. And then he discovers that he's a drug mule. And then he discovers everyone's a drug mule. And I wondered if you could explore that a little bit, because that sort of bothered me that Banderas was kind of upset about it. I don't know. It just seemed a little bit weird and a little bit of an added thing that didn't necessarily add too much to the movie itself.
Yeah. It was weird. It's like he had no sympathy for just how poor this town was. And it was basically all they could do to survive. But I think at the same time, like, his whole thing was he was going after drug dealers. And I guess because they were the ones that killed the woman that he loved, and they shot his good guitar hand or something. So he spent the rest of his life going after drug dealers. And then maybe if they're going to start using like little innocent kids and beautiful women to do their dirty work, that makes his life a little more difficult. I don't know. But yeah, it did seem like a bit of an overreaction to yell at like an 8-year-old kid and break his guitar.
Hey, this seems like a perfect time for me to overly use the same criticism of all drug movie type complaints again. I know I've said this before, and I'll say it again.
All right, Robert's on his soapbox. He's going to smash guitar.
Here's my soapbox, and time listeners of the show have heard this rant before. But, of course, Bucho is a drug dealer. He would be a totally, perfectly legitimate businessman if the drugs he was selling weren't illegal, made illegal by the state. He's selling a product to a willing buyer. He's not forcing it on anybody. He wouldn't be forced to use. Now, obviously, he's a caricaturized character in that he's waving his guns around, shooting his own men. Of course, why would people want to work for this guy if he's actually going to shoot his own men? If you thought your boss was an asshole, imagine a guy who pulls out a gun and just starts randomly shooting in the office one day. I don't think he'd stick around very long. But he's kind of forced to use violence as a means to solve disputes because he can't just call the cops. I mean, maybe in Mexico he could bribe some federales, or I don't know how it works down there, whatever. But he can't just call the cops and legitimately have other drug dealers, you know, he can't, you know what I'm talking about, Daniel. The problems are solved by violence because they can't go through the court systems to solve disputes. Right?
Yeah. Hey, you make something illegal, you create a black market for it. You create an incentive because the prices are going to be higher because you're restricting and increasing the risk.
Right.
Yeah. And there is no way to sort of resolve disputes between territory or anything like that. And then on top of that too, since there is so much money involved and it's usually in the poorer neighborhoods, it attracts younger kids who might have some sort of entrepreneurial spirit. You know, they want to do something, they're ambitious, but they look around and they see these guys with, like, you know, hot chicks and all the money and everything. And instead of going into like some sort of legitimate business, they're attracted to that. And it, like you said, it would be a legitimate business if it wasn't illegal, but then they get into that whole life of crime and they start doing the drugs and it's a vicious cycle. Yeah.
Right. And the backside of that is that all of their legitimate opportunities have been extremely limited with regulations and license laws and minimum wage laws that prevent them from being able to acquire a job in the non-black market, non-gray market sector. So exactly, it right. further That's limits true. Their opportunity and funnels them into these things that are quote unquote illicit and lucrative.
Yeah, that's a very good point.
Indeed. Indeed. And there are probably many, many businesses. I mean, this isn't just a Mexico thing where drug dealers will use business as fronts to move product and hold on to product and that sort of thing. I mean, I live in the poorest county in Washington State, and I swear there are many places that don't have enough customers to justify being in business. So I suspect that there is something going on keeping these businesses afloat. And I think
are you talking about pre-COVID as well?
Yes. Okay. Also pre-COVID. Yes.
Yeah. That sounds like Salma Hayek's bookstore. And she even talks about it, how she opened it up with, like, her parents left her money or whatever. And she opened up this bookstore because she thought the town needed one, but nobody ever bought anything there. So how long could she operate like that? So in essence, Bucha was subsidizing her little hobby of having a bookstore.
Yeah. Indeed. He's like, no, this is a product that'll actually sell. Here you go. Hang on to this for me. So you're subsidizing bad businesses, bad entrepreneurs where businesses should fail.
Yeah, it's a waste of resources.
Yeah. That's right. Yeah, he's like the Fed printing, funneling money into malinvestment.
Exactly.
Yeah, although I don't know if that town needs another bar with piss-flavored beer and bad service.
It didn't seem like much of a tourist town, other than the couple of tourists that do show up in there. But anyway,
my brand.
So I really liked Tarantino's like little cameo in it. And
yeah, it's good. Funny joke too.
Yeah, funny joke. And then he said he didn't know the guy who'd brought him in. But I found that their willingness to just kill people just wouldn't be a long lasting thing. Like, they would quickly run out of people to, like, run the business, to buy the product. It just didn't seem like a sustainable thing.
Yeah, it did seem like a small town, and they're just piling up, like, 20 bodies every half hour or so. That was kind of interesting.
Yeah, and I know the cartels do get pretty violent, and they will leave a lot of bodies hanging from overpasses and that kind of thing. But at the rate this thing was going, in the callousness they showed towards human life, it did seem like, why would you really? And the rewards must be spectacular for you to want to put up with that kind of risk. I mean, maybe unless the place is that economically depressed and there really are no other ways to make a living.
Yeah. And what about Bucho's, like, if you see anyone in town you don't recognize, kill them?
It seems like a way to engender a lot of anger, wouldn't you think?
Right. Yeah. And of course, they end up killing Machete. And I was kind of hoping that would have come back to burn him in the end.
Yeah, they just sort of left that hanging. It was another kind of another issue there.
Yeah, it's just like no consequences.
Yeah, even though the whole movie, Butch is like afraid of the cartel, the Colombians, right?
But yeah, and I wanted the guy who did the flying kick to do another kick of some kind, but he never did. He just shot guns and then died. I wanted that to be a thing. Like, he does this really cool flying kick, and he can knock out this one dude. Why didn't that come into play later on? I don't know.
After he like broke his leg, like had like a compound fracture or something.
Yeah, and he's got this like cool metal leg. He could like throw that metal leg up into somebody's head. I don't know.
Yeah. Yeah, there's a lot of setups in this that I wonder if they had planned on, okay, we're going to, you know, set this up and then do something with it later. And then just due to time and budget constraints, they just kind of didn't do it. Because, yeah, the metal leg guy, it seems like he was set up to be something more important than just guy who climbs up on a roof and dies while falling, gets shot while falling down.
Yep. It sure seemed like he was going to do something. And then he just turned out to be another red shirt bad guy that just died by the hero. I don't know. What was that? What was the point of setting that guy up? I don't know. I mean, the scene of them showing it, I guess, showed his callousness, Bucho's callousness a bit. But you see that plenty of times throughout the film. I don't think you even need that scene. You could probably do without it.
Yeah. And I feel like all we are is like nitpicking here. But this is maybe something that Rodriguez could revisit and do something along these lines and then actually have these payoffs happen.
Sure. Or have it be done by another writer and then maybe have him direct it, or another, just another team that comes along and redoes something like this. I mean, I appreciate Rodriguez's style. I don't know what kind of movies he's making these days, but I don't think he's making the same kind of movie. So it would be nice to have somebody who was influenced by him to come along and make another film, I don't know, in the same vein. I know you said that there was a third movie, Once Upon a Time in Mexico, and I remember seeing that movie, but I don't remember anything, it being anything like Desperado or El Mariachi. So I don't even know how the movies are related.
Well, isn't Banderas, and isn't he Mariachi, and he like saves the president of Mexico or something?
What?
From like an assassination
attempt? In Mexico?
Yeah.
I mean, El Mariachi shows up in Desperado as one of Banderas' friends at the end.
All right. So there's a little confusion. So the guy who played El Mariachi in the first one is one of Banderas' friends in this one.
Yeah.
But in this one, Banderas is El Mariachi.
Correct.
Okay.
And he's also El Mariachi in Once Upon a Time in Mexico.
Oh, Banderas is in that movie?
Isn't he? I thought he was.
Yeah. I'm pretty sure.
I don't know. I remember the main character. He's like a CIA guy or something. Goes down to Mexico. Right?
Yeah.
Is that right? Okay. I don't know. I have no... I just remember it was like him and Johnny Depp.
And then it gets weird. But I think he saves the president of Mexico.
Okay. I believe you. I have no idea. I don't remember it being done in the same style or having anything to do with the stories of El Mariachi or Desperado. I don't know. I mean, it doesn't necessarily have to. Like the Cornetto trilogy, those movies don't connect in any way, really.
Just the main guys.
In kind of important way. But anyway.
Yeah. So, I didn't take a whole lot of notes on this one. And then we did the Matrix episode, and then I watched Reloaded. And so that sort of overwrote a lot of what I had remembered from this movie, unfortunately. So I'm actually having trouble like recalling some of the scenes and whatnot. But are there any notes that either of you guys have that you want to discuss before we start to wind this one down?
I jotted down a couple things. Let me pull up my notes here. I thought maybe we could talk about the non-aggression principle, because I didn't think that Antonio Banderas actually violated it throughout the entire movie. Now, maybe I missed something, but it always seemed like he was acting in self-defense against an aggressor. I guess we covered the war on drugs. There were no police in this entire movie, no federales, no anything like that. And it reminded me of this town somewhere in central Mexico. I think it's called like Chiron or something like that, where this was like 10 years ago, where there was like so much police corruption and cartel violence that the citizens in this town just sort of rose up and drove the cartel out of town, drove the police out of town, and they set up their own little like self-serving private police force just made up of the citizens. And it kind of reminded me of something that town needed to do.
Yeah, that sounds familiar. Yeah. I'll try to find a story about that, an article about that, and put it on the show notes page. Because yeah, I think I remember there was that town in Mexico that got rid of the police, and crime went way down, and it was actually an improvement, at least per my recollection. But things are getting fuzzy out there.
There wasn't a lot of coverage of it, but I saw an article or two, and it seemed really interesting, like a good experiment in anarchy. And I guess that's all the notes I took down. I don't know.
All right, cool, Johnny. I appreciate that. Let's explore that first thing you said, the non-aggression principle.
All right.
Antonio Banderas. So was he acting in self-defense throughout the entire film? That's an interesting question. I also think it's an interesting question to ask if the patrons of that bar he shoots up were acting in self-defense the whole time. Because Steve Buscemi comes in and he tells this story of the biggest damn Mexican he'd ever seen, who goes in and blows away this whole other bar full of scumbags. And then Antonio Banderas, like the next day, comes in with
the guitar case,
guitar case full of guns. I think if some guy who they expect is there to kill everybody comes in with a case of guns, you're kind of justified in pulling a gun on him, are you not?
I think so, but then at the same time, Banderas was like, hey, wait, like, I'm not against you guys. I'm just looking for Bucho. Like, I don't want any trouble. And
I agree with what but when guns are involved, when someone, I mean, not necessarily carrying a gun, I have nothing against carrying a gun, but in these circumstances, I don't know if Banderas is acting as an honest actor or not. I don't know if the patrons of the bar can believe him when he says that, right? Like, that he just murdered a whole bunch of people in another bar. Allegedly. I'm not necessarily going to take him at his word that he's like not there to do any harm. You know what I mean?
Yeah, that's a fair point.
Right. And wasn't that the point of Buscemi's story, was to like scare up information about Bucho and to make these guys a little bit on edge about Mariachi showing up?
Yeah, he's kind of playing the violence starter role, right? I mean, getting them on edge so that they will react.
I thought he was trying to feel them out to see if they knew who Bucho was or if they had any information.
Definitely what he was trying to do for Banderas. But what he was in effect doing to the bar patrons was getting them keyed up and get their hackles up and getting them ready to defend themselves, right?
That's true, yeah.
If anything, he made them aware of a potential threat to them. Not the scumbags over there, but these fine, upstanding guys who are at this bar.
Right. I freaking love that. I love the way he was low-key ripping on that. But Dan, what do you think? Do you think Banderas was acting in self-defense the entire time? I think it's a little bit of a gray area. If not, they both were, or maybe Banderas was the aggressor in that one scene.
I mean, there's potentially just a miscommunication there. Also, it's like a matter of perspective, right? Like maybe he didn't intend for them to see those weapons, and he was not intending to utilize them against those guys because Bucho wasn't there, and that's who he was seeking out for revenge, even though he didn't seem to know who Bucho was.
Right.
And then those guys saw the guns on accident, right? Because was it one of the other guys like looked in the case, or they had him open the case and they saw the guitar and then it like popped open a little bit.
Right. It popped open after they looked at it. Faulty spring or something. I don't know.
Right. Yeah. And you know, maybe we just blame the spring. Blame the failed spring for because sometimes, you know, random events can lead to unintended consequences, right? Like people can perceive that action as being intentional or revealing something that shouldn't otherwise have been revealed. And so there's a little bit of dumb luck that goes into situations as well.
Oh, sorry, sure. This might be a bit of a sidetrack. Have you guys done The Rock yet?
No, nope, that's on the list too.
Okay, because you know when they're in the shower room and they're talking back and forth and the guy knocks over the bricks and they think it's a gunshot and then just all hell breaks loose. Sort of the same situation there.
Right. Yeah. Right. Yeah. Yeah.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
So neither one would technically be the aggressor then.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So maybe you got something there, Johnny, with Banderas being following the NAP throughout the entire thing. I mean, he's definitely acting in self-defense and defense of Hayek when they burn down the bookstore and they attack the bookstore. What about the showdown? The showdown's kind of like a mutually agreed upon almost, right?
Like a high noon thing.
Kind of a high noon. Like they both show up. You don't have to be there. You could turn around. Hard to call anybody the aggressor there almost.
Yeah. And then at the very end, Bucho clearly says that he's about to shoot Salma Hayek. And so I don't think you have to wait for him to actually pull the trigger in that situation.
Definitely not. No, I give him full pass to pull that speed rig out and handle business. Interesting. I mean, that's, you know, a hero that has makes interesting moral choices or even questionable moral choices is a more interesting hero to watch. It's not something I'd ever considered before if Bendix was strictly following the nap, though. That's interesting.
He did steal those drugs from the pickup guys after the kid dropped off the guitar.
That son of a bitch. Right.
But that was just
and so he
that
smashed he smashed that guitar. He smashed the shit out of that guitar. You can't use that guitar anymore.
All right. So we're going to fault him for stealing drugs and smashing a guitar, but not for the self-defense killings.
Sounds good. Yeah, I'm on board with that.
Yeah. Now, what about his, his whole like point of his mission was to seek revenge for being wronged. Now, that's like seeking out justice in whatever avenue he had available to him, right? Like it wasn't like he could get justice any other way. So it's almost the eye for an eye kind of justice.
Yeah, the vigilante justice.
Yeah, the Hatfield-McCoy justice. Because, I mean, Robert, you've talked about this bunch of times in the past, but like that's one of the things that quells those types of things is, well, if they're going to kill one of ours and we're going to kill one of theirs, and it's just going to potentially escalate from there, and then they have to come to terms with, you know, how do we de-escalate this situation?
Yeah, and obviously the story in this movie is a little bit muddled. We don't know exactly the situation of him getting shot in the hand and the reason why his woman was murdered. We don't know any of that. It would have been interesting, or at least given us the audience, I think it would have given the audience a little bit more to really root for.
Wait, is that not brought up in El Mariachi, the first movie?
I don't think that even happens in El Mariachi. I don't remember there being like him shot in the hand and his woman getting murdered. I mean, maybe I'm wrong. I remember a whole bunch of shootouts in Mexican town and there's a jail scene. But I don't know. I don't remember. I've seen that movie a couple of times. There's a turtle
in a while.
I don't think I've ever seen it, but I thought that was the whole point, was that it was like the backstory, was my understanding. But
it could be. Maybe it is the whole entire backstory, and then I just need to watch all three of them in a row to get the whole story. Maybe my criticisms are invalid. But
right, and maybe people can be critical of us for not having seen all three of them, so we know what the fuck we're talking about.
Or maybe we can just evaluate this movie on its own merits, and there should have been some explanation as to why the drug dealer killed his woman, and then the audience would have been able to get more on board with the hero character in his quest for justice.
Right, and why they shot him in the hand. Because if it meant that like playing guitar was like super important to him and they were trying to like fuck him over, so they're going to shoot him in the hand so that he has to suffer through the rest of his life, not only with his woman being murdered, but also now he can't do something that he enjoyed.
Yeah.
That was the impression I got. But at the same time, those flashback scenes with his first woman that they killed. I don't know. It seemed like they did him a favor. If he got to upgrade.
Yeah. I noticed that as well. I mean, yeah, Salma Hayek, upgrade.
Yeah.
Double D.
But it is weird because it didn't feel like the movie ran very long. What was it, like an hour and 45 minutes or something like that?
At most, yeah.
Yeah. So like, I don't know. It didn't seem, you know, it wasn't like, oh, we're like coming up on 2.5 hours and this is just way too long for us to go into some sort of detail on the backstory or something like that.
Yeah. And especially since I think El Mariachi, I think is done in original Spanish. And there might be an English dub, but showing Desperado to American audiences for the first time, you can't expect them to have seen Desperado before this. I mean, that's just...
Or Mariachi before this one.
Mariachi before this, yeah.
Yeah, Mariachi, yeah, thank you. Yeah, anyway. That's about all I got.
So have we beat this bro to death?
Perhaps.
Yeah, buddy.
I think, yeah.
All right, well, Robert, why don't you lead us off with your summary and review, and let's give this a rating out of, I don't know, 10 tequila shots.
10 drug-filled, cocaine-filled guitars out of 10. This movie is amazing. No, it's good. It's a lot of fun. It's got some fun dialogue. It's got some good macho style. I was just sold from Buscemi. And if you don't like Buscemi, and you don't like macho stuff, I don't know why you would watch this movie. But if you like a good old classic, you know, shoot 'em ups and a whole lot of testosterone, then yeah, you're gonna have a good time with this thing. It's not the most intricate plot. It doesn't make a whole lot of sense. If the movie was a little more, even more straightforward, like just like even spelled out a little bit more of the character motivations, you get it. You understand why he's upset, but you didn't experience it really yourself as the audience. You didn't see the injustice. Maybe the drug dealer had a perfectly good reason for killing the lady and shooting him in the hand. Maybe he had really screwed over the guy, and this was just, you know, a sense of retribution for that. Maybe she was about to kill somebody else or whatever. We don't know. All we're left to do is assume that it was an injustice and we're going to get on board with the hero story. But it would have been nice to give that to the audience in this film, just so that you would be more on board with the story and really rooting for the guy. As it is, instead, it's more of just a fun action shoot 'em up movie, which is fine. It's not trying to be a whole lot more than that, but it did give a fair amount of screen time to these story elements that kind of link all the action scenes together. And it would have been good to, you know, give us a little bit more heart. So I can't give it a whole lot better score than like a 7. It's 7 cocaine filled guitars out of 10. It's a lot of fun. It's got a great sense of style. It's got some funny jokes that still hold up to this day. I was still laughing and smiling. It front loads it though. Like the good stuff is all in the beginning, and then the end, it's like, eh, we're just gonna finish up this thing. But you know, and like Dan, we talked about in the review, it has a bunch of setups that don't really quite pay off, which is unfortunate. I think a more established or more experienced writer would take these elements and then weave them back. And if you're gonna take the time to set these things up, give us some kind of a payoff. That just kind of makes sense as an audience. We kind of expect them to be useful some way to the plot if you're going to spend a whole lot of time showing them to us. Otherwise, we're like, well, what was that for? What was that for? What was that for? You know, it's just, you could just take these scenes out and the movie would still be the same or even better. So the writing is a little bit inexperienced, a little bit less than great, but I had a lot of fun with it. I'll still have a lot of fun with it probably in 20 years from now. And movies done in this style, yeah, I'll still watch them. They're not Shakespeare, but they're not trying to be. 7 cocaine field guitars out of 10.
Or 7 explosions and walkaways.
7 slow motion explosions, slow motion walkaways. Excellent.
All right, there we go. We're going full screen with this. So if you guys are watching on the YouTube video, you can see Hayek and Bandidos walking away from the explosion.
That was two grenades, by the way.
Oh, two grenades. Yes. Yeah. That seems a little...
two grenades. That's a giant fireball.
Yeah, down in an alley, and they're up on top of a roof. All right. So, Johnny, let's get your score out of 10 hand grenades, 10 hand grenade explosions, and a final summary review.
Yeah, you know, I think I agree with a lot of that. I might bump it up to like a 7.5 or maybe an 8 because I also really like the soundtrack. I know we didn't talk about that, but yeah, the Canción de Mariachi, the house that love built. Those might be the only two songs that they play in the entire movie, but I like them both. And you're right. It did fizzle. It was like when I thought back to, cause I hadn't watched this movie in like 20 years or something like that. The only parts that I really remembered were the first half. I remember those bar scenes and then maybe the whole bookstore burning down. But the rest of it, it just sort of fades. And then the last scene where they just sort of cut to the hospital and you don't see like the last shootout, that still bothers me.
Yeah, that literally does fade.
Yeah, they're just like, all right, that's enough. We're out of film. Let's just get to the hospital and say goodbye to this kid and then have her pick him up. And that, I don't know what kind of car that was, but it was a pretty rad Jeep or whatever the hell it was. But yeah, I just don't think this isn't one that you're supposed to really overthink. It is what it is. You know, it's beautiful people killing each other. And lots of violence, good music, and some comedy. And it's nice being, because I am down here in Mexico, but I'm in like a completely different part of Mexico. Like I'm in the touristy safe zone that only has one cartel that protects this whole area. So there's no, actually with the exception of the former governor of the state getting killed just right down the street last December. It's been pretty safe. Yeah, I forgot to mention that in the show, but. Yeah, it's right down the street from where I am. I could actually hear the gunshots. He was at this it's like a steakhouse club kind of place. And yeah, he went to the bathroom and they just popped him like Godfather style. And then the bus boys cleaned up the scene. And then for the next 2 weeks, they just had like military patrols going around. And it turns out that, sorry, this has nothing to do with my review of the movie, but
it fits right in. It's great.
So the that former governor was in a bunch of like shady business deals with this like big shot developer who did the tower that I'm living in. I'm in these three towers on the beach and there are three towers behind me. And this guy's like the Donald Trump of Mexico or something. And he stepped on the wrong toes with the cartel and they got him a few months before they got former governor. Yeah. But I forgot where I was going with that.
But you're in the safe part of Mexico.
Yeah, I'm in the safe part of Mexico. So it was nice to see like just a reminder as to why I'm not going to like central Mexico to just walk around and see what's happening. But yeah, I'd give it a 7.5, maybe an 8 just because of the soundtrack.
All right. Very good. Very good. Well, you guys are wearing the rose tinted glasses or maybe they're the cerveza tinted glasses because you guys are drunk. Now, this movie, I think it has a lot of style over substance. As Robert likes a simple story told well, I think this is a simple story that goes a little sideways and it does start off really, really well. It has a lot of like, I don't know, almost like set pieces that lead you to think that the rest of the movie is going to be great. It has a bunch of setups, but not a lot of payoffs other than Buscemi's performance and Tarantino's performance, which are of course short-lived in this. But you know, it was the 90s, man. It was a macho action-packed movie that you weren't supposed to be too cerebral about. And it kind of helped get Rodriguez more prominently on the map. I think that this was the best performing sequel for quite a while, for quite a few years. And then his earlier movie, El Mariachi, I think was the most profitable, like percentage wise movie in the last 20 or 30 years, something like that. So, I mean, Rodriguez definitely has some skill and did great, great stuff as far as like being able to make an impact culturally and get these films out there. But I don't think that this one is necessarily like a great film, though it is popcorn worthy and entertaining. So I'm going to go with six explosions behind Selma Hayek and Bandidos walking away from the grenades on the roof.
Yeah. I you know, that's fair, but I think without Steve Buscemi, this movie would have been like a 3. I don't know. He is great in it. Even that it's like the first like 15 minutes before he gets killed, but he's just such a good actor. And I guess you really have to be when you kind of look like Steve Buscemi. you can't get away with your Antonio Banderas looks, but yeah, I don't know. He's great.
Yeah, I would agree with you.
Yeah.
Without him, this movie doesn't have that that comic and that narrative that really helps to hold it together.
Yeah, without Buscemi, you got to have some comic relief in all the seriousness. You got to have some, romance. I mean, did you guys believe the love story here? I don't know if there was enough screen time for this to really.
They knew each other for like 12 hours.
Yeah, and then all of a sudden they're like madly in love with each other.
Yeah, I mean, I get it. She's pretty hot, but wow, I don't know. I might have just skipped out on the whole bookstore scene. He'd already, already hit that time to go. Why are you spending the night?
All right. Well, this has been a lot of fun, Johnny. And I think that you threatened us with wanting to return. I hope that you still have that desire within you after doing this recording with us.
Anytime.
This has been great. And we're going to be continuing on our Matrix series next. Our next episode after this will be on The Matrix Reloaded with Pat McFarlane of Liberty Weekly. We did the original Matrix from 1999 just last week with Jeremiah Martin of Reel on Reels. That's his podcast. So the next one will be Reloaded. This one we did with you, Johnny, as a Cinco de Mayo episode because I didn't want to not do it. And so we're breaking up The Matrix just a little bit. That's okay. And then after that, we're going to have Mike C on for Revolutions and then Ryan Jones on for Animatrix. So we've got a lot of stuff coming your way as our listeners. So this will be, stay tuned. We'll be coming back at you each week until our demands are met.
Yeah, and what are sorry. Go ahead.
I was going to ask Robert. Well, you know what? I'll save my little setup for after what you were going to say.
Okay. I was just going to say that I caught maybe the first half of the Matrix episode from last week. I was watching it earlier today and I really enjoyed it. And what a great, just a great idea for May. Great set of movies, a lot of material. So I'm really looking forward to that.
Yeah, that was one of the reasons why we were reluctant to do the original one, just because there's so many different ways you can take it. It's like, what do you even talk about? Because there's just so much. It's a bit daunting. But I think we approached it pretty well. And I'm looking forward to further discussion with additional guests. So that'll be a lot of fun. So anyway, what I was going to say is we're coming at you each week until our demands are met. And Robert, what are those demands? And how can they support the show?
Oh, gee, Christmas. I don't know what you're talking about. Yeah, you can support the show just by living life, you know, just like doing what you feel is right for you and your family. Being successful. Being a positive role model to people so that, you know, us libertarian people, we're like the fine upstanding people. Not only do we have principles, but we're also honorable people with integrity. We're not going to screw you over in a business deal. We're not going to stab you in the back. We're good people. And there's something to that, I think. So you can live your life in an honorable way. You can live your life with love, compassion, understanding. And then you can also talk about, you know, our podcast with your friends. You can leave a positive review. You can like and subscribe on YouTube. Any number of places, wherever you find us, you can interact with us in some positive way. And that will be fantastico. Thank you very much. Cinco de Mayo episode, special episode for you and us. Thank you all.
All right. Well, thanks for throwing a little bit of Spanglish in there at the end, Robert. That really is the crowning achievement of our Cinco de Mayo episode here.
Yeah, you got to do it.
You got to dust those cobwebs off. All right. So, Johnny, where do people find your show? And then we will sign off here.
Anywhere that you listen to podcasts, you know, iTunes, Stitcher, it's on Spotify. You can go to peddlingfictionpodcast.com if you really want to see the shitty website that I built myself. But anywhere that you listen to podcasts, it should be available. It's a free show. I do it twice a week, and I have a lot of fun with it. So you guys should all give it a listen.
All right, very good. And we'll have a link to that on our show notes page at lastnighters.com/175. And with that, we'll say goodnight from last night, everyone. Peace out. All right, and I got just a few more minutes on the Actual Anarchy podcast before we get into some of the Kathleen Turner Overdrive, which is our bonus content for our Patreon supporters. I didn't really save much in the way of questions for this, but something did occur to me in that this movie was made in the mid-90s, and since then, it seems like the whole world's gone a little crazy and gone woke. So I'll pose the question to you, Robert, first, and then we'll go to Johnny. Do you think that this movie could have been made today with the same, I don't know, same style? Or would it run into some problems?
Yeah, I think you find a few things for the wokesters to whine and complain about here. You could probably say it's a little bit racist. They wouldn't complain that it's a mostly Mexican cast, but there are a few Spaniards pretending to be Mexicans in the two main leads, which might be an issue. Maybe not. Probably not. They're all POCs, right? But the toxic masculinity on display is problematic. Let's see what else.
Oh, man. Actually, I want to take off on that and bring in Johnny, because from my understanding, I've been to Mexico, I don't know, a dozen times, and it seems as if machismo is actually a big part of culture there.
It really is. Yeah. I've been surprised, you know, I meet a fair amount of Mexican women out here. And just the way that they talk about their like previous relationships, I'm just like, holy shit. Like they're used to sort of getting pushed around a little bit by men. And it is, even for me, who I'm like, I'm virtually impossible to offend. I'm just like, wow, this is like, it's a completely different culture. And they are very, they're a lot more subservient than American women are. I don't know. Take that for what it's worth, but yeah, there's and it's also weird because like when I walk around Mexico, maybe it's just because like I'm not used to being like one of the taller people in the room, towering over people at like 5'9". But it's like I don't understand how like you find most Mexican guys really intimidating unless they're like cartel guys. But yeah, there's a lot of machismo out here.
Okay, all right. So it seems as if the woke mob is a mob of privilege in just the United States.
Yeah, and that's the other thing is that like Mexicans do not get offended by this stuff. There's no woke Mexican culture. Like they think Speedy Gonzalez is fucking hilarious. Okay, like when we were canceling I don't know what were we canceling a couple months ago, like syrup bottles and all and cartoon characters, they were like making a point to being like, we love Speedy Gonzalez, don't fucking touch our cartoon shit. Like they're a much happier culture, and they see humor everywhere, and they're just a lot more pleasant to be around in general.
Okay. Yeah. I always found that ironic that the wokesters and the white nationalists both want the same thing, to remove people of color from products and culture. I don't know. It just seems like they're both kind of achieving the same end. But
yeah, and the wokesters are always offended on somebody else's behalf, as if they are the experts and interpreters of what other people feel and think. It's really quite disgusting, honestly.
And it kind of goes back to that whole it's easier to tear something down than it is to build. You know, they're always going after something that somebody else did, because these are people that have never done anything themselves. They've never accomplished anything. They clearly have nothing better to do with their time, and I think it's the same type of person with that sort of mentality.
Yeah, they don't know what the time and effort it takes to build something and create.
Right, and it could be
destroyed.
And they'll go after, you know, like somebody could cure cancer, but if like 40 years ago they wore blackface to a Halloween concert, like that would be the story. It wouldn't be the fact that like he just saved like hundreds of millions of lives. It would be, oh, he went to a Halloween costume, like, you know.
Oh yeah, there's that one guy who, like, I forget what he did. The scientist who wore the Hawaiian shirt when he was had some big thing. He's like, send a rocket to Mars or something, but he was wearing a Hawaiian shirt when he was talking about it. So that was like the big story.
Are you not allowed to wear Hawaiian shirts now?
it's problematic. It's problematic.
Oh, okay. Well, I don't have. I just have linens.
It's for a corporation, Johnny. Come on now. I mean, yeah, you're appropriating culture all the time right now down in Mexico as a whitey down there. How dare you?
Until they hear me start speaking Spanish, they think I'm a Mexican now. So I just had to keep my mouth shut and
you
walk.
You made
around.
A taco. You son of a bitch.
I made a quesadilla earlier today. You know what's weird? They don't. I've been watching them make quesadillas out here. They don't put anything down. Do you guys cook at all?
A little bit. Maybe not.
Okay. They don't put anything in the pan. No oil. No butter. Like when I make a quesadilla, I put butter in the pan, or at least on one side of the tortilla. They just do it dry.
Hmm.
I feel like that's one thing that Americans took from Mexican culture that we improved upon was the buttered up quesadilla.
Mm. Yeah. You okay. That stuff.
All right. So now we got cooking tips at the back end of the show here. That's perfect. Okay. Well, anyway, Johnny, this was a lot of fun, and we would love to have you back. So this has been our episode on Desperado for Cinco de Mayo special, and you can find the show notes and more, everyone, at actualanarchy.com/232. You can find Johnny and Peddling Fiction wherever podcasts are sold, and of course, it is free. It's twice a week, and peddlingfictionpodcast.com. You can find the show notes and more at actualanarchy.com/232. Give us likes, subscribes, YouTube, and podcast downloads and all those things. Keep our numbers up and tell your friends. And buy stuff at Trubster.com. That's Robert's merch website. And we will see you guys all next time when we do The Matrix Reloaded with Pat McFarlane of Liberty Weekly. And with that, we're going to get into some Kathleen Turner Overdrive. So we'll say maximum freedom, everyone. Andale, andale.
Chipmunks. Chipmunk. We're the chipmunks. Guaranteed to brighten your day. Doot, doot. Doot, doot, doot. Doot, 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 doot.